Answer yes or no to the following questions. Here goes. Number one, is it wrong to wash, dry, or set your hair on the Sabbath? Number two, is it wrong for children to ride bicycles on the Sabbath? Number three, is it wrong to attend a funeral on the Sabbath? Number four, is it wrong to take a plane trip on the Sabbath? Number five, is it wrong to take a drive into the mountains on the Sabbath? Number six, is it wrong to pick flowers on the Sabbath? Number seven, is it wrong to pull weeds from your garden on the Sabbath? Number eight, is it wrong to polish your shoes on the Sabbath? Number nine, is it wrong for children to do homework on the Sabbath? Number 10, is it wrong to cook breakfast on the Sabbath? Number 11, is it wrong to plant flowers or vegetables on the Sabbath? Number 12, is it wrong to listen to the radio music of your choice on the Sabbath? Number 13, is it wrong to eat in a restaurant on the Sabbath? Number 14, is it wrong to buy groceries on the Sabbath? 15, is it wrong to play a game of chess or some other type of parlor game on the Sabbath? Number 16, is it wrong to watch sports on the Sabbath? Number 17, is it wrong to gossip on the Sabbath? Number 18, is it wrong to barbecue steaks on the Sabbath? Number 19, is it wrong to play croquet on the Sabbath? Number 20, is it wrong to make your bed on the Sabbath? And number 21, is it ever wrong to rest on the Sabbath? Okay, now you got 21 numbers. You answer them Y or N. So here's what I'd like for you to do without any condemnation or judging anybody. I want you to tell me how many of you had a Y for number 5 or an N for number 5? How many had Ys for number 5? How many had an N for number 5? Let me see the name. Okay. How many had a Y for number 2? An N for number 2. How many had a Y for number 1? An N for number 1. How many had a Y for number 8? Some people had Y. How many had an N for number 8? Oh, a little division there. How many had an Y for number 9? How many had an N for number 9? Oh, let's see. Well, why aren't we all united? That's good. All right. How many had a Y for number 11? How many had an N for number 11? Oh, I see. Some people have. Okay. How many had a Y for number 12? Anybody have an N for number 12? Okay. Isn't that nice that we're all united? This is just wonderful. We all have the same feeling, same spirit. All right. How many had a Y for number 15? A Y for on number 15. How many had an N for number 15? Okay. How many had a Y for number 17? How many had an N for number 17? Only one person. One, two, three. That was, is it all right to gossip on the Sabbath? And that's the one you forgot. All right. Most everybody had a Y for that one. How many had a Y for number 18? How many had an N for number 18? How many had a Y for number 21? How many had an N for number 21? Okay. So, some people said the question was, is it ever wrong to rest on the Sabbath? And some people had N's. How many had an N for that? Okay. How many had a Y for that? Okay. Sometimes it's wrong to rest on the Sabbath. Right? It would be wrong. It would be a sin in some cases to rest on the Sabbath. If your neighbor's house caught fire and you said, I'm sorry, I got to rest today. He says, come on, help me. Help me get out here and, you know, shovel, trying to get the hose. And you say, sorry about that. I'm going to rest on the Sabbath. I can't do anything for you. Would that be a sin? Yeah, probably. Now, you notice that we had a lot of different opinions about What was yes, what was no, what was okay, what was wrong, what was not wrong. People had different ideas of that. Now, had we taken a different commandment, for instance, had we taken commandment number 8 on stealing, we could ask the same questions. Is it wrong to steal paper clips? Is it wrong to steal cars? How many would say, is it wrong to steal paper clips? You'd say yes, would you not? How many would say wrong to steal cars? Yes, you'd say yes. How many say wrong to steal groceries from the grocery store? Is it wrong to steal from a big corporation, like Walmart, but not from a little pop and a mom and pop store? We'd all say the same thing. It's wrong to steal, period. Right? Would we not? We would say that it's wrong to steal. And if we said something like murder, you know, or commit adultery, you know, is it okay to commit adultery if a person, if you're really in love? Is it okay to commit adultery if the person really wants you to commit adultery? Is it okay to commit adultery if... we would have all kinds of different... But we'd all come down on pretty much the same thing. We would not be divided on commandment 6, commandment 7, commandment 8. But the fourth commandment has many exceptions. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 2. This is the first time you see anything about a seventh day. Chapter 2 of Genesis, and beginning in verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth were completed and all their hosts. And by the seventh day, God completed his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day. Notice that it is not called here a Sabbath. You notice that? In fact, you don't see the word Sabbath in the Bible until you get to Exodus chapter 16, the first time the word Sabbath is ever used in the Bible. Here, it's called the seventh day. Then God, and we know that the seventh day is the Sabbath, okay? This is when we call it the Sabbath, it's the seventh day. God did not bless any other day. God did not hallow any other day. God did not sanctify any other day. The seventh day is the day God sanctified, and this seventh day of the week, which we know from creation, it's the seventh day, it has been the seventh day. Saturday is the seventh day of the week and has been forever. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he had rested from all his work which God had created and made. So God created the seventh day. Now, what was the thing God created, and how did he create the seventh day? Created it by resting, right? That's what he did. He rested on it, and he actually created the days by putting the light and the dark, the sun, and all that. But how did he create the seventh day? How did he make this a day of rest? He made it through resting himself, okay? Figuratively resting. He rested from the creation. That's what he did. Now, what was the thing that was made prior to the seventh day? What was made prior to the seventh day? What was made on the sixth day? Man. Humans. God created man on the sixth day. Male and female, he made them. This is Mark chapter 2, verse 27. And he was saying to them, the Sabbath was made for man. Because man was made first, the Sabbath was made for him. It came after him. And not man for the Sabbath. Consequently, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Now, the Sabbath was given originally as a delightful, wonderful thing for resting. It was given so that people could and should rest. And if you look at the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5, and beginning in verse 13, 6 days shall your labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you shall not do any work, you nor your son, your daughter, or your male servant, or your female servant, or the ox, or donkey, or any other of your cattle, or the sojourner who stays with you. Now, listen to this next statement of that commandment. So that your male servant and female servant may rest as well as you. Just like you need to rest. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. The Sabbath was given to keep you from going and being a slave again. How many people do you think are slaves? Slaves to their profession. You go to a lot of little small businesses. You go to a business. You go to some restaurant businesses. And believe me, when I was a kid, my folks had a service station restaurant business. We worked 7 days a week, constantly. Working 7 full days a week. And we went years without a vacation. My folks and my dad's brother, and you know, we would take different shifts. His family would take one shift and our family would take the other shift. And as I got to be a teenager, you know, I could, you know, take care of the service station myself and, you know, and do all the things that were necessary. We worked all the time, 24, I mean, originally we kept the service station open 24 hours a day. Then we started from 6 in the morning till midnight. But every day of the week, we were virtually slaves to that business. And God says, I don't want you to be a slave anymore. You were slaves in Egypt. You never had a day off. You can't take a day off because somebody else is running you and ruling over you. You've got to work. And God said, one of the things I'm giving the Sabbath for, so that your male servant and female servant may rest as well as you. Because you better remember, you were slaves in the land of Egypt, and the Eternal your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and outstretched arm. Therefore, the Eternal commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. I don't want you being slaves anymore. I don't want you having to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's what God said. The Sabbath was supposed to be a delight. We sang a song a little earlier. This is the day. What does it say? I will rejoice in that day. Well, I can tell you something. When I first started keeping the Sabbath, I didn't rejoice. I was guilty all day long. I didn't know what was supposed to be work. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. All I did was read all day. I tried to read every booklet, you know, all church literature. I tried to read my Bible all day long. And everything I did, I felt guilty. And I could not wait until the sun went down. And when the sun went down, I felt such a feeling of freedom. Such a feeling of joy, such a feeling of elation that God's not going to condemn me now. I could feel very good. Now the Sabbath day was over. And here came Saturday night. Boy, now I could watch a television show if I wanted to. I could do this. I could listen to the kind of music I wanted. I could read something else. I could read a magazine. I could do something else. And, you know, I could get out and exercise. I could do some other things. But the Sabbath wasn't a delight for me. It was filled with condemnations, guilt feelings, repression, oppression. It was everything but a delight, which was its original intention, to keep you from being a slave. And it was made originally holy, to be sanctified, to worship God, to get closer to God. I want you to read with me chapter 5 of the book of John. Now, John's Gospel, we'll read a few other things, but this is a very interesting account. John's Gospel, chapter 5. After these things, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now, there is in Jerusalem by the Sheep Gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having 5 porticos. In these lay a multitude of those who were sick, blind, lame, withered, waiting for the moving of the waters. Verse 4. Now, there are a lot of discrepancies. Some manuscripts take this out, and the oldest manuscripts don't have this. But it's perfectly okay because it explains why the water moved. For an angel of the Lord went down at a certain season into the pool and stirred up the water. And whoever then first, after the stirring up of the water, stepped in was made well from whatever disease with which he was afflicted. These people were all out at this pool, waiting for this water to churn, and somebody can jump in. The faster you can jump in, then whatever disease you had was cured. Well, you can imagine people shoving their way, trying to get into that pool as fast as you could. Verse 5, a man was there who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there, and he knew that he had already been a long time in that condition, he said to him, "Do you wish to get well?" The sick man answered him and said, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool. I can't get in there fast enough. I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I'm coming, another one steps in before me." So just for one person, somebody else always gets in there ahead of me. I try to get there fast enough. I can't ever do it. Jesus said to him, "Get up. Pick up your bed, your pallet." He's lying on a pallet. "Pick up your pallet and walk." Immediately the man became well. As soon as Jesus said that. And he picked up his pallet and he began to walk. Now, John's gospel tells us it was the Sabbath on that day that Jesus did that. So the Jews were saying to this man who was cured, "Hey, it's the Sabbath and it's not permissible for you to carry your pallet." But he answered them, "Well, he who made me well was the one who said to me, 'Pick up your pallet and walk.'" You know, when a guy makes you well and he tells you to pick up your pallet, I'm going to pick it up, you know. They asked him, "Well, who is that? Who told you to do that? Who told you to pick up your pallet and walk?" But the man who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had slipped away while there was a crowd in that place. Now afterward, Jesus found him in the temple, in the temple precincts, in the area of the temple, and said to him, "Behold, you have become well. Do not sin anymore, so that nothing worse happens to you." I don't know what sin he had done. I don't know what thing. He just said, you know, you better watch how you walk. You better start living a good life so nothing worse happens to you. Verse 15, the man went away. He went away and told the Jews, that is the Jewish authorities, that it was Jesus who had made him well. I know who that was now. It was a guy by the name of Jesus. For this reason, the Jews were persecuting Jesus because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But he answered them, "Well, my father..." Now, they start asking him. They're going to question him, you know. And he answered them, "My Father is working until now, and I myself am working." Philo, when he did his exegesis of Exodus chapter 20 and verse 11 about keeping the Sabbath because on that day God rested, Philo said, you know, God doesn't really rest. God is always working. God doesn't rest. You understand that. And so the Jews accepted the argument that God never rests. And how did they come to this? Well, because God upholds all the laws of the universe. People are born on the Sabbath. People are born on the Sabbath day. And guess what, brethren? People die on the Sabbath day as well. Things happen on the Sabbath day. Flowers grow. Things bloom. Fruit ripens. It rains on the Sabbath day. It sometimes has lightning and flashes and wind and thunder on the Sabbath day. It snows on the Sabbath day. There are sometimes tornadoes on the Sabbath day. You see, all kinds of things. And these things can't happen, according to the Jews, unless God, who controls all the forces of nature, is still in charge of nature. So they said, okay, That's right. We understand God works. This is okay. But man shouldn't work. See, God, Philo said, well, look, God, the whole earth is God's residence. The whole universe is God's residence. You can't tell God what he can do or not. This is, the whole thing is his. So, of course, God upholds all things by the word of his power. He has all kinds of power. All the laws continue to operate. But this is what Jesus said. So the Jews wouldn't have any argument with his first statement here in John 5, verse 17. My Father is working until now. From creation all the way to now, my Father's working. This is the part they will have trouble with. And I myself am working. They would have a little trouble with that one. And they had a trouble with the other statement. My daddy, my father, my dad is working. You called God your dad. You said he's working. And then you say you're working. So verse 18. For this reason, therefore, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him. Because, this is a very powerful verse in the book of John, because he had not only, in their minds, was he breaking the Sabbath, but also was calling God his own Father, even worse than breaking the Sabbath, making himself equal with God. Therefore, Jesus answered, saying to them, truly, I say to you, the Son of Man does nothing of himself unless there is something he sees the Father doing. And whatever the Father does, these things the Son does in like manner. So, you know, he goes on to explain it. But they were furious. So he said, you know, he goes on and shows him all things that he himself is doing. And the Father shows him greater works than these so that you will marvel. Just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, even so the Son also gives life to whomever he wishes. You can give life. We know that God can give life, but you're saying you can give life? Now, next in verse 22, for not even the Father judges anyone, but he has given all judgments to the Son. So that all will, listen to this phrase, so that all will honor the Son even as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Is that equality, virtually equality with God? That's what he's saying. They were furious with this. Truly I say to you, he who hears my word, and believes him who sent me has eternal life and does not come into judgment, but has passed from death to life. Were they sort of right about the man carrying his pallet? I mean, they go back. The Jews are saying, well, look, you know, you can't just pick things up like this. They base it on some scriptures. It wasn't just take a look at Nehemiah chapter 13, verse 19. This is Nehemiah's record of what was happening in those days. He said, and it came to pass, it came about that just as it grew dark at the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I commanded the doors should be shut, that they should not be open until after the Sabbath. So the gates into the city in Jerusalem, he wanted them to be shut. Then I stationed some of my servants at the gates that no load should enter on the Sabbath day. They were bringing in loads of things, okay? That no load, the Hebrew word means a load, something you lift and you carry, something a load. You know, you can carry a sack of potatoes, you can carry a bushel of wheat, you can carry something. It's a load. That he didn't want any load being brought in on the Sabbath. Look at Jeremiah chapter 17. Jeremiah chapter 17, dropping down to verse 21. Thus says the Eternal, take heed for yourselves and do not carry any load on the Sabbath day, or bring anything in through the gates of Jerusalem. Don't carry loads. And you shall not bring a load out of your houses on the Sabbath day, nor do any work, but keep the Sabbath day holy as I commanded your forefathers. Yet they do not listen or incline their ears, but stiffen their necks in order not to listen or take correction. But it will come about, if you listen attentively to me, declares the Eternal, to bring no load through the gates of this city on the Sabbath day, but to keep the Sabbath day holy by doing no work on it. So they didn't want to. So when Jesus told this guy, hey, pick up your pallet now and go and walk. So he reaches down, he picks up his pallet, what he was laying on, and he's walking. You can say, how much of a load? Is it a big load? Is it a little load? Does it weigh 50 pounds? Does it weigh 20 pounds? Does it weigh 10 pounds? Does it weigh 100 pounds? We don't know what the load was. It was a load. The Pharisees saw him carrying something. They had all these rules. They had all these regular. Hey, what's he doing? Hey, you're breaking the Sabbath. He said, well, the guy that healed me told me to carry this. He said, take it. And you know, that's who told you to do that? Who told you to carry something on the Sabbath? In the book of Exodus, chapter 20, here's the original command. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day of the Sabbath, the Eternal your God, in it you shall not do any work. You nor your son or your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, your cattle, or the sojourner stays with you. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Eternal blessed the seventh Sabbath day and made it holy. So here we have a statement that the seventh day is the Sabbath. But that command, now notice, 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day you shall not do any work. In order to understand this command, you and I, anybody, has to ask the question, what is work? Well, is work fixing your bed? Is work doing the dishes? Is work, well, in the Jewish Talmud and all the other do's and don'ts of the law, you could not kill a mosquito on the Sabbath unless it bit you. If it bit you, you could kill it. But if it was just sitting over here, it wasn't biting you, you cannot do that on the Sabbath and swat a mosquito, because that was defined as work. What was work? That was work. To walk a certain distance, that was okay. Another step or two, that became work. Doing this became work. Doing that became work. And any other day, now, think of what Jesus could have said to the man. You're healed. Get up and walk. But leave your pallet here until later. Come back after the Sabbath. Pick up your pallet. Nobody's going to steal it, because they'll be accused of carrying something on the Sabbath. So you don't have to worry about that. Just leave your pallet here and go off. But Jesus didn't do that. He said, pick up your pallet and walk. How much work is work? Now, Jesus didn't think it was a big deal. He didn't consider it a big deal. The original Sabbath day statements, and we'll come back to this later, had no one, when Adam got the seventh day, there was no statement in there about Sabbath observance or how to observe it. In the original giving of the Sabbath day, in Genesis 2, there is no definition of work or command about it. Only later did there become definitions. And because Jews wanted to, you know, the Israelites wanted to make sure we didn't disobey, well, we had to have more and more strictures. What is work? Because they would go to the Pharisees, say, well, we're not supposed to do any work. Would this be work on the Sabbath? Would that be work on the Sabbath? Would it be okay to do this? Is it wrong to do that? And so they came up with a whole list of do's and don'ts. So many, so much, that the Sabbath, they did to the Sabbath what I did to the Sabbath. They made it a burden. They made it such a heavy burden. They made it so miserable that you're not supposed to do this. You can't do that. You can't do this. You can't do that. And so it was so over the top that their lives became so regulated. They became enslaved. Now, the Ten Commandments are beautiful. They're the great basic law of justice in the United States. And I think there's a copy of the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court, on the wall or something in the Supreme Court. Because they're the basic law. They are great, wonderful laws. But if you were writing the Ten Commandments today, if God were writing them today for you and me, he wouldn't say some of the things the way he said them in the Ten Commandments back then. Because the Ten Commandments given at Sinai would not be written the same way. Do you follow me? Do you understand that? How do you understand it? Let me tell you what one of them said. Here it is. In Exodus chapter 20, verses 5 and 6, you shall not make for yourself any idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them nor serve them, for I, the Eternal, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those that hate me. Here's in Exodus chapter 34. Exodus 34, verses 6 and 7. The Eternal passed in front of him and proclaimed, the Eternal God, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness and truth, who keeps loving kindness for thousands, who forgives iniquity, transgressions, and sin. Yet he will by no means leave the guilty unpunished, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and on the grandchildren to the third and fourth generations. Would we write that today? Would God write it like that today if that were part of the Ten? Because that's part of the Ten Commandments. I mean, you read it in Exodus chapter 20. That's the way it's written. Later on, during the time of the prophets, Ezekiel spoke for God, and he gets this message from God, and he writes this down in the book of Ezekiel chapter 18. Read it in Ezekiel chapter 18. I'm going to begin in verse 1. Then the word of the Eternal came to me. Now this is God's word coming to Ezekiel, saying, he says, asking Ezekiel, what do you mean by using this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying, the fathers eat the sour grapes, but the children's teeth are set on edge. They do the sins, and it's the children who are punished for it. Now listen to verse 3. God speaking through Ezekiel. As I live, declares the Lord Eternal, the Lord ever living. When God says, as I live, well, is there anything more sure than that? When you're talking about the ever living one, and God says, as I live, well, there's nothing surer than that statement. As I live, declares the Lord Eternal, you are surely not going to use this proverb in Israel anymore. Behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father, as well as the soul of the Son, is mine. The soul who sins will die. But if a man is righteous and practices justice and righteousness and does not eat at the mountain shrines or lift up his eyes to the idols of the houses of Israel or defile his neighbor's wife or approach a woman during her menstrual period, if a man does not oppress anyone but restores to the debtor his pledge, and he does not commit robbery, then he gives his bread to the hungry and he covers the naked with clothing. In other words, he's doing good and right deeds. If he does not lend money for interest or take increase, if he keeps his hand from iniquity and he executes true justice between man and man, and if he walks in my statutes and my ordinances so as to deal faithfully, he is righteous and will surely live, declares the Eternal God. Then he may have a violent son who sheds blood and who does not do any of these things to a brother, though he himself did not do any of these things, that is, he even eats at the mountains and defiles his neighbor and his wife and so on, and he oppresses the poor, he commits robbery, restores the pledge, and he lifts up his eyes to the idols, and he commits an abomination, and he lends money for interest. In other words, he does all the bad things that his father didn't do. Now behold, he has a son who has observed all his father's sins, which he committed. I say the father's committing the big bad sins now, and he has a son. But the son doesn't do these things. Verse 15, he does not eat the mountain shrines. He does not do all this. He does not oppress anyone. He keeps his hand from the poor. He does not take interest. He does not increase. He's very good. At the end of verse 17, he will not die for his father's iniquity. He will surely live. As for the father, because he practiced extortion, robbed his brother, did what was wrong and among the people, behold, he will die for his own iniquity. Yet you say, why should the son not bear the punishment for the father's iniquity? Notice verse 19. Because they were remembering the statute that was written in the Ten Commandments the day they were given. He says, why should the son not bear the punishment for the father's iniquity? When the son has practiced justice and righteousness and observed all my statutes and had done them, he will surely live. The person who sins will die. The son will not bear the punishment for his father's iniquity. Nor will the father bear the punishment for the son's iniquity. The righteousness of the righteous will be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked will be upon himself. Jeremiah 31, verse 29, leading up to the new covenant, he says this: in those days they will not say again, the fathers have eaten the sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. But everyone will die for his own iniquity. Each man who eats sour grapes, his teeth will be set on edge. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Eternal, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, with the house of Judah. Not like the covenant which I made with their fathers in the day that I brought them by the hand out of the land of Egypt. My covenant which they broke, although I was a husband to them, declares the Eternal. This is the covenant I will make in those days. I will put my law in their hearts, within them and on their heart, and I will write it, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Matthew chapter 12. And we'll deal with this even in more detail. And they said, at that time Jesus went on the Sabbath through the grain fields. And his disciples became hungry. They began to pick the hearts of the grain. But when the disciples saw it, they said, behold, your disciples are doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath. Now, notice two things. Number one, Jesus was the one going through the grain fields. That's what it says, verse 1, Matthew 12. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath through the grain fields. Now, the Bible says here that the disciples were hungry, but that's not what Mark's gospel says. It just says, Mark chapter 2, they're walking through the grain fields, and Mark just says they just picked the food. They just picked it up. It happened that he was passing through the grain fields on the Sabbath. This is Mark 2, verse 23. And his disciples began to make their way along while picking the handfuls of grain. Matthew says they were hungry. The Pharisees see this. Okay? Your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do. And now they're referring to the law of Exodus chapter 34, verse 21. You shall work 6 days, but on the seventh day you shall rest, even during plowing time and harvest time you shall rest. So they interpreted that you cannot harvest anything. Cannot harvest on the Sabbath. Regardless of what it was. Jesus and his disciples are walking through. Now, I want you to notice that Jesus does not argue that it was lawful. He said, it is too lawful. He doesn't say that. He says, Have you not read what David did when he became hungry, and he and his companions? Have you not read what David did? How he entered the house of God, and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat. Now, I can bring you a whole bunch of scriptures. I don't want to belabor the thing on that showbread in the house in the temple was only for the priests to eat. It could not be eaten by anybody else. But David is running, and they got it. Now, almost all laws, the Jews were very practical. In the Old Testament, it's practical. The Jews are very practical. If somebody's life was in danger, if a life was in, yes, you could, you could violate some of these ordinances and all of these rituals. Life takes a precedence over the Sabbath. It takes precedence over the temple. It takes precedence over a lot of things. Ask what was not lawful to eat. Or have you not read that on the Sabbath day, the priests of the temple break the Sabbath, and actually use the word profane the Sabbath, and are innocent? They profane it. The same word that is used in the book of Isaiah, chapter 56, you shall not profane the Sabbath. But if you had, now, here's the rub. Here's what Jesus says at the end of this. And this is what we've got to consider. But if you had known what this means, he's quoting Hosea 6, verse 6. I desire mercy or compassion and not a sacrifice. You would not have condemned the innocent. Let me read that in the New English Translation. If you had known what this means, I want mercy and not sacrifice. The New International Version. If you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. Let's see if next time in our next sermon we can understand what these words mean.